So, Bill, normally I would say, you know, tell me where we are, but I'm not going to do that because a mushroom hunter never gives up his secret spots, right?
Well, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Especially when it comes to truffles, but we'll talk about that later. When did you first get turned on to the whole idea of wild mushrooms?
Probably when I was living in France. And I think, like most Canadians, before I went there, I was into white button mushrooms and not much else. And then in France, we had a lot of foragers come to the back door of the restaurant I worked at. And so it was just amazing. My first introduction was probably through the porcini, or cep, as they called it in France.
What was it about that turned you on?
Well, they're a beautiful, plump, pretty sexy looking mushroom, for one thing. And then when you cooked it up, it was really a revelation because it was literally a meat-like, caramelized flavor. Spectacular, actually.
Meat-like, and that's the way I hear more mushrooms being described, is that they really have that meaty flavor to them.
Yeah, well, and there's real reasons for that. You know, there's the plant and animal kingdoms, and fungi sort of fall in between. So they have some basic proteins and elements that are similar to meats in some ways.
And we can say that we're in the Cowichan Valley.
Yes.
And
Trans-Canada Trail,
which narrows it down to several miles.
Yes. Well, the Trans-Canada Trail is actually about 6,000 miles.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This area, it's got to be one of the best, right? In Canada, would you say?
I think it's one of the best for diversity. One of the key things with most mushrooms production is really moisture. And this is, in some ways, like a temperate rainforest all winter. So and lots of moss, lots of storage capacity for water. And then that makes the mushroom season that much more vibrant.
Do you worry about the habitat that's around and what's happening to it as it relates to mushrooms?
Oh, totally. One of the things that really is key to mushrooms are the whole ecosystem. So the trees are critically important to the mushroom habitat. And in this particular area, Douglas fir is one of the most prime habitat trees. And that's the one that's logged most extensively. So logging really is detrimental to mushrooms, at least in the short term.
Because when we see the mushroom on top of the soil, that's just one part of the mushroom, really.
Yes. You know, it's quite a large organism, and one of the largest organisms on the planet is a mushroom, a honey mushroom. They you know, analyzed with DNA down in Washington State, and this is just one they know about because they did a study on it, and it's something like, you know, 21,000 or 2,100 acres in size, one continuous genetic sample.
So it's springtime. What are we most likely to find this time of year?
Well, this time of year, really, there's just a couple of things that we're really keen about. One of them is morel mushrooms. And we need to go probably along areas that have a bit of moisture, like streams or lakesides in our particular area. And we're looking for Douglas fir, a bit of a mixed variety of trees. The other prime habitat is old orchard trees, so apple trees, cherry trees, in our particular, in quite a few areas, that's a prime habitat for morels.
What do you like about them?
What I like about them is they occur in the spring, so that makes the season a bit longer, and they're really sort of like a giant sponge. There's a very rugged texture on the outside of the mushroom, so it really readily absorbs flavors. It has a mild, pleasant, spongy mushroom taste, but it's that ability to absorb those flavors that makes it really, really sought after in the culinary world.
I know you like stuffing the big ones.
Yes. one of the recipes in the book is sort of like a Spanish tapas version of morels. So we take chorizo and olives and caramelized onions and stuff them, and then we braise them in chicken stock, and it's amazing.
Now, the morel is one of, like, for myself, since I've lived here, I've got to know about four different mushrooms that I'm really comfortable with identifying and eating. And the morel is one of them. What about the others?
Well, in the springtime, you probably could find some oyster mushrooms. So they're pretty well identical to the ones you find in the stores, maybe a little bit whiter. And they're going to be on leaf-bearing logs or trees, and quite often they've fallen over a creek. So again, there's lots of moisture around, and sometimes they're standing, sometimes they're falling over, and you'll see that right out of the trunk, you'll see the oyster mushrooms growing. And the other good thing about oysters, well, there's several, but they're abundant. So when you find one, you're going to find 100. And they're also excellent for your immune system. So they're considered a medicinal mushroom as well.
Okay, and then when we move through the fall, what are the most common ones?
Around here, by far, the chanterelle. And that's, again, Douglas fir is one of those key trees. Lots of different fir trees, but Douglas fir around here in particular. And you're going to find lots of chanterelles. We have an abundant variety of some beautiful specimens, including some giant versions of chanterelle.
And what else? I'm thinking of pine mushrooms. Are they less common around here?
They are less common, as reflected in their price.
Yeah.
They like a particular type of habitat, and it seems to be a bit of variety. So there are other areas that have a lot of hemlock trees or, berry bushes that they're forming under, like huckleberries and blueberries. But here, again, it's Douglas fir. I'll probably say that over and over again because it's an amazing tree. You know, there are trees that you don't look for, and one of them is cedar. So very few good edible mushrooms are under cedar trees. There's a lot of toxic, poisonous ones. But if you're in a healthy mixed forest here, and it could have maples, it could have other trees, pine trees mixed in, but we keep looking over and over again for Douglas fir trees in this area.
One of the things that you've done in this book is there's extensive notes on foraging, but also what you're most likely to find in the supermarket as well. And I think when I was growing up, I don't even think there were fresh mushrooms in the grocery store. They're all canned. But you must have seen the variety of fresh mushrooms and dried mushrooms, for that matter, available in your regular grocery stores has expanded quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that the Asian markets had a lot to do with that. Like, we imported some of the cultivated types from Asia. The shiitake, which we associate with Japan, was originally cultivated in China. And then the Japanese sort of took it over. Well, they both have it, but I mean, so a lot of the ones you see now, like enokis, they're all cultivated from either China or Japan and then brought over to North America and cultivated here. So you're seeing, now you can go to a good grocery store and find up to 10 varieties of mushrooms. So, you know, it's expanded from one, the button mushroom, to at least 10 varieties now, plus dried.
So you don't have to be a forager in order to enjoy a variety of mushrooms.
No, and a lot of the mushrooms have their own, you know, different characteristics. And even just stepping up from the white button to the brown button, you're going to get into a little bit different flavor, a little denser texture. An excellent application for anything with wild mushrooms. A brown mushroom would be a great substitute.
And you have a constant companion. Tell us about Oliver.
Yes. Oliver is a Scottish border collie who really loves to go into the woods. So one of his main things he does is keep squirrels away from me. And also he loves to seek out any mud puddle or water, and that's his happy, happy place.
But he's not a truffle hunting dog.
Not yet, no. No. But he's a great companion. It's not really a good idea to be walking anywhere alone. Not that the dog's going to help you that much, but our walks are pretty much on pretty well-known trails. But if I go off into the woods, I always bring someone with me, just because you never know what will happen in the woods.
Yeah, you could, like, drop your iPhone or something like that.
You could drop your iPhone.
Okay, that's an in-story, but we won't go.
Yes. Or be out of cell coverage very quickly with an iPhone.
Yeah.
That Sorry,
works.
Apple.
Now, let's talk a bit about truffles, because these are a variety of fungi, I guess, that grow under the soil mostly.
Yes.
But very rare, very hard to cultivate. So I wanted to talk to you about two things. One, the ones that you've been finding around here in British Columbia, and then the efforts to cultivate them. So talk about the ones that that you've been finding over the past couple of years.
Right, well, we usually associate truffles on the Pacific coast with Oregon, and that's sort of like the hotbed of truffles. So we discovered that the range of those, some of those Oregon truffles are as far north as the south end of Vancouver Island and the Fraser Valley. So we've been finding white Oregon truffles under, guess what kind of tree?
The Douglas fir.
Correct. So really along the banks of, in this case, the Cowichan River, looking for the Douglas tree, Douglas fir tree. And they're growing up through the roots, pretty close to the surface. And they can be anywhere from a golf ball size down to, you know, a pea-sized truffle. And usually quite abundant as well.
And now, which have this amazing aroma, is fantastic. And we've also been reading, even just in the past couple of months, about the efforts to cultivate truffles in BC seems to be working.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing project for maybe the last 8 to 10 years. And it's been duplicated in other parts of the world. Probably the best success probably would be in Tasmania, Australia, where they've inoculated many kinds of host trees work, but the one that favors our climate is probably the hazelnut. So the hazelnut trees are inoculated with truffle spore, and you wait 8 to 10 years after, and you'll get truffles popping up. One of our challenges is having the right kind of warm, mild winter so they ripen properly. So that happened this year, and it happens in the occasional year, and maybe with global warming it might happen more often, who knows. That's the upside of that. Mm-hmm. Small upside.
Yeah, but will we ever see them for sale here in BC, do you think?
I think in theory per acre you could probably get several pounds. So some of these farms have planted 5,000 hazelnut trees inoculated, you know, so we're talking about 5-acre plots. So in theory, you know, if it's successful, you'll find that it'll be like a gold rush and everybody will want to do it. There's a few things you have to be careful about. One of them is the competition with native truffles. So again, you have to make sure that you're far enough away from things like Douglas fir. See, they would have the naturally occurring mycelium, which would compete with it and probably crush it. So the places that have had success are old farms that were replanted with hazelnut trees. So they've been dormant and fallow for, you know, 40, 50 years.
Because it's big business. It's millions of dollars in sales, I guess, around the world. Millions.
Billions, maybe billions. Yeah, you know, there's tons that come out of France and Italy. And then there are truffles occurring all over the world. There's a lot of truffle coming out of China now, which is, you know, a small fraction of the price. But, that, you know, you really have to be worried about unscrupulous people who mix in Chinese truffles with, you know, European truffles. So there's a bit of fraud in that whole area. We could also talk about truffle oil, one of my pet peeves.
Now, is it? I've been told to always try to buy truffle oil that looks like it's got a little piece of truffle in it. Is that a good kind of thing to watch out for, or is that?
If it's properly made, yes. You really have to look out for the word aroma, truffle aroma on the label, because that quite often is just a chemical substitute for the truffle flavor. So it has to say the truffle, and often the scientific name of the truffle. It could be a summer truffle, winter truffle, white truffle.
And do you consider it safe to be buying wild mushrooms from people that are selling them at farmers markets?
Yeah, again, there's always the caveat of, you know, you have to know the person who's selling them to you. So, yeah, you know, you have to be confident they have a good idea of what they're selling you as the actual product. But, you know, I have the knowledge to do that myself. But, you know, it's pretty easy with the chanterelle. That's something that really can't mess up too too difficultly. But there are people that sell things like false morels. And they can sometimes have a very bad, you know, they're edible, but they have a bad reaction with alcohol in certain people. So, you know, you have to be aware of that risk.
And how, when you went about figuring out the recipes for this book, what did you want people to get out of it?
A very good question. I think I wanted to show the variety, and this book is sort of the end result of 10 years of experimentation. So there's a lot I learned since I did my first book on mushrooms. So I wanted to show how much sort of technique and how it applies to recipes from all over the planet. So we merged, you know, Thai and mushrooms and, you know, Spain. All these different influences that have come into my life are now into this book.
And there's even a short chapter of desserts.
Yes, it always freaks people out. But we made, you know, I started off with the pine mushroom because it was very aromatic and has kind of a cinnamon-like quality. So my first dessert was probably a pine mushroom panna cotta to kind of capture that flavor. And then I started caramelizing them. So we did this mushroom upside-down cake. So with caramel and butter and sugar, mushrooms on the bottom, flip it over. And it was amazing. It really brings a great kind of chewy texture. You know, maybe you can't really tell there are mushrooms after that. It could be apple, for all you know, but it's just basically a great texture and a great kind of mysteriousness to the whole dessert.
Hmm. Do you have one absolute favorite mushroom?
Would probably have to be the porcini, because it's very thrilling to find it, for one thing. And it brings back memories of that first sort of excitement about mushrooms. But I think pine mushrooms are a close second. And again, they're fairly rare, but the thing about the pine mushroom which makes it so amazing is the aroma. So when you found one in the woods, sometimes you smell it before you find the mushroom. You pick it up and it has this spicy cinnamon aroma, and it is intoxicating. So it really, really is very thrilling to find a pine mushroom in the woods, because when they're fresh, they're very, very volatile, very, very aromatic.
Now, we've talked a lot about fresh mushrooms, but you also use a lot of dried mushrooms and mushroom powders.
Yes. Well, the mushrooms are like a window in time. It's a very short season. So experiment with lots of ways to preserve them, and pickling and, you know, preserving. But drying is very versatile. It also makes their shelf life almost infinite when you remove the moisture from it. And a lot of the good medicinal properties are still preserved from drying. So drying is a fantastic way, and it actually concentrates the flavor of certain mushrooms like morels and porcinis. So porcinis is very, very aromatic, very pungent. And we've taken that, we take the dried porcinis and grind them up into a powder, and then we use those to sort of perfume pastas or gnocchi, many, many types of dishes. Any kind of sauce will really benefit from that injection of a little bit of dried mushroom.
Okay, Oliver has found a puddle.
He's found a puddle.
Let's go and find somewhere else. Okay. Thanks, Bill. So we're back inside now, and Oliver has settled down, and we're going to do something with these beautiful morels that we found. But one thing that we shouldn't overlook is that mushrooms have some pretty significant medicinal properties.
Yes, I mean, there are lots of components of mushrooms that have very profound effects on the human body. And you can just take the example of magic mushrooms, psychoactive mushrooms, that actually engage in your brain and cause you to have visions or hallucinations. So there are some very serious things that can happen. But on the flip side, there's very positive effects from eating certain types of mushrooms. The major one that we can readily access is probably the shiitake. And it's been used in China for, you know, 1,000 years as a medicine. And really with strong immune system boosting properties thought to generally improve your well-being. And there are many others like that, like oyster mushrooms, enokis. They all have specific properties, but most of them affect your immune system.
But there hasn't been really that much study in North America of them, has there?
Well, up until recently, there's lots of clinical trials on a lot of different mushrooms and also mosses as well, and lichens. But in the last few years, there you can actually buy capsules of pills with the mushroom active components in them. So they're available in a lot of grocery stores, pharmacies. The simplest way is just to eat a plate of shiitake mushrooms.
That sounds good. What about the whole grow-your-own phenomenon?
Again, it's really kind of taken off around here. A great place to access those products are the CD Saturdays that they hold through the spring. They usually are people selling kits these days. And for the most part, they're just bags of sawdust inoculated with certain mushroom types, the most common being oyster, but also shiitake as well. And shiitakes are also sold in small plugs. So you would take a log of alder is the most common, drill holes in it, you tap in these little plugs, inoculated, and then you wait a year and you'll have amazing, the best shiitakes are grown on logs.
It's funny because it's like you either have to be really patient with mushrooms and seeking them out, or truffles, you're waiting for years. But also, when they're ready and they're out there, you got to go because they're gone.
Yes, and that's where you get into drying and other ways of preserving. Freezing is actually good for certain mushrooms if you saute them. Saute them in a bit of butter or olive oil. You can add garlic if you want, and then let them cool down and freeze them, and they'll preserve very, very well.
Okay, I'm hungry. Let's eat.
Great.